Hello, Handstand Castians. It is Emmett here. I'm just doing a bit of a preamble to our upcoming episode, where the upcoming episode was recorded live at our two intensives in Turkey. And yeah, it took me a while to edit these. Sorry for a bit of delay. And then we've been on a bit of hiatus because me and Mikhail haven't been able to align our schedules correctly to get an episode in. So I hope you enjoy these recordings. These were a lot of fun for us to do. Because we're doing it in front of a live audience, which is always a novel experience. So I've merged the two episodes together to give us a nice long episode, so I hope you enjoy it. If you'd like to join us in person, we have two intensives coming up in April. One for advanced athletes, performers, coaches, you know, a bit more advanced, and the other for beginners to intermediate practitioners. If you're thinking about levels on these, we could sort of say, I am not too confident in sticking a handstand, but I kind of know how to handstand, or I'm a complete beginner, would be the beginner level. And the advanced is like, I can do a handstand, I can do shapes, I can press, maybe I'm working on one arms, that kind of level. Obviously, we kind of crouch to the group who's there. If you're uncertain on your level or uncertain which one suits you the best, obviously just get in touch, we'll be able to give you a bit of advice on that. Our early bird ticket pricing for these events ends at the end of the year on December 31st. So you could save yourself a bit of a discount. There is installment plans on that as well if you want to set up one of them with us. You can learn more about that at handstandfactory.com/intensives. And then also, you know, it is the end of the year coming up and our holiday sale is now running and it's going all the way through to December 31st. We've got three time-limited bundles for practitioners of all levels that offer 20% off the bundled programs. Or you can, you know, chart your own path for 2024, going forward, wherever you want. And you can save 15% off any individual program, including pre-ordering our brand new kick-up program, which will launch in January. There's no coupon needed. All the prices, discounts are just on the website live. And you can check out what we're offering at handstandfactory.com/sale. So on to our episodes. And I'll put two episodes together. So a bit of a treat for you. We have the one at the beginner's retreat and the one at the more advanced retreat. Other than that, I hope you guys have a good end of year, and we will be speaking to you sooner. Okay, we're rolling.
5, 4, 3, 2.
Never. Hello, and welcome back to a special edition of the Handstand Cast with me, Emmett Lewis, and my glorious co-host, shrouded in darkness, Mikhail Christiansen. How are things going, Mikhail?
They told me it was live on the internet. I didn't know that. I mean, can't really complain, can I? Being in Turkey, lots of cats around, lots of nice people. Kind of cold, actually, for the evening. Suddenly the temperature dropped a hell of a lot quickly today.
Right now, if you don't know, if you're listening in the future, we're probably not here still. I hope not, anyway. But we are recording live at our Handstand Factory retreat. So just to prove that there's actually people out there listening to us, please make some noise.
That was not pre-recorded, okay? Live on the internet. Okay?
Live on the internet. We're big in Japan.
Yes. Are we?
I think we sold the program there once.
Oh, okay, once. Okay,
yeah, see. It's big. It's a small place. Mm. So, yeah. It's one of these weird ones where we're like, do we ramble on? We've been here for 5
Let's
days.
Let's be fair, we always ramble on. Yeah. Just topic sometimes, occasionally.
Yeah.
How long have we been here now?
About 4 or 5 days. Huh? We're on the second last day of our retreat. We're kind of discussing what topic we're going to talk about. And we decided to shamelessly self-promote to talk about our retreat. Mm. No, not just that. We're going to talk a bit about intensive training periods, which our retreat, I suppose, comes under. And we, as most people know, we pull these topics out of our ass. So we're just down in Mikhail's cabin talking about it. One of the things that jumped out to me in, if we think about like a lot of physical activities, they have something to prepare towards. And you're like, okay, I got sports. Okay, I'm training in my season. I'm doing my training. And then I have an event. I got powerlifting. You know, I've got an event. You have something to train towards. Whereas in hand balance and a lot of solo activities and ones we do for hobbies, we don't really have these things to train towards. And one of the interesting things that comes up a lot of times in, you know, sport events or other events is like you hit a new peak just because of like the event ambience, the atmosphere, the motivation. We've kind of seen it now that we're coming into day 4 of what we've been doing, where a lot of people are kind of
starting to be a bit tired.
But they're hitting new things. A lot of firsts on presses and interesting new shapes and other stuff coming out. So it's kind of interesting, I suppose, to talk about like intensive training periods and what they can and can't do for you.
Yeah, I mean, like it's with performing, obviously, that's something you have. But I think when you've gone further into your career, it's not that special. Like you're basically performing a routine they're very safe with and so on. So you're not really kind of going for like anything new. But I think like if it's kind of an event like this, or if it's just for yourself, or you're meeting up with a bunch of friends or something, and you've decided to do sort of like a more specific training period, because it can also just be that, okay, I have this lot of time during summer, I am going to train a hell of a lot more than normal. That can also kind of act in the same way. But the fact that you have kind of either some sort of, like you say, either competition or a social gathering as we have here, where there's like, it amps it up in a special way. And I think it's funny to see, like we saw today during the retreat, where it's like, it's day four, there's a lot of like, I mean, there's obvious fatigue due to a lot of people having done a lot of stuff, but still, things that you didn't really know you could do suddenly comes out. And it's a bit funny with, like, of course, over long periods of time, you need kind of like the training and rest and recovery, to progress. But sometimes, like in these short bursts, you can suddenly like get like crazy stuff done, which you didn't think that was going to happen in a way. So it's pretty cool to see how that kind of focus and like social aspect, etc., that it kind of comes together to like give it like an extra boost.
Yeah, it's that kind of thing of like we crowd a lot of strangers into a room, and then we make them do things. And that's kind of, it's just always like, it's this different experience you get as a coach at these things versus the attendees who are all like, you know, we're still pretty fresh-ish.
Maybe not you with the kids and stuff.
Yeah. But other than that, it's like, okay, we're keeping the energy going, the classes as best we can. People are getting tireder, but it's still, there's noticeable differences from day one to day four in people's technique and training and transition. Everything they're doing, you're like, oh, would that have happened if you're training by yourself? Definitely would have over a period of time. But it's like you can kind of, I always think about like overclocking the system.
Yeah.
We're like, we overclock the system for a short period of time and we run it like, we burn a bit hotter than we should normally burn, but then we stop it. You couldn't like keep this pace of training going for quite a long period.
Yeah.
But it's kind of, when your lifestyle is optimized to it and the group is kind of psychopathically focused on one thing only, it kind of gets a nice things can happen.
It reminds me of that period I had in Prague like recently with the shows, where like I was so hyper focused on making it work and getting through it uninjured and all of that, and in like second week, I think it was fourth or fifth show, the second week I was trashed, like it was the worst show, and I was like, oh no, now it's gonna go downhill from here. I knew I had like 6 or 7 more shows to go, and I was like just feeling like mega run down, and we finally had our one day off, and I come in, it's like, shit, I'm probably not recovered for the last week, and I'm like, I just need to give it everything. And I come in, play 1 show, 2 show, 3 shows, like I'm feeling pretty good, like suddenly like the cardio was much better, and like I kind of just strolled through the last 3 shows, which I thought would be the worst ones, but somehow like even with there was no time for proper recovery at all, but like it kind of felt like the body kind of just entered into this kind of like emergency turtle mode, where it's just like, okay, now we're getting this done, and then we just go home and like finish it up. But and of course that was more kind of in protection mode than kind of excitement, as is more the fact when you have a thing like this. But there is, it feels like very often the body just kind of, it has a couple of levels in store, but they aren't accessible always, and they're definitely not accessible always over time.
Yeah,
and I think that's like the key thing to remember also, like for people attending events like this or just going into an intensive period, like it is a short-term burst kind of thing. You can get a shitload done from it, but like taking then that expectation of, hey, this is how I train now, like it doesn't work. I remember also people coming from, like, they had been to train in Kiev like a couple of years ago, and it was like, oh yeah, this is the routine we run now, because that worked when they were in school there and everything was awesome, and that's all they did. They come home, they do the same, and they just end up run down, because it's not actually how you train. It worked during those 7 weeks they were there, but then they come home and they try to keep the same with all of other things in life, and just the fact that 7 weeks you can survive it. But can you over like 44 weeks?
Yeah.
Probably not.
You can survive it over 7 weeks, but can you survive it over 44 weeks when you still have to do your shopping, pay your bills, socialize, all these things? Mm. Do you need to socialize? You could go hermit mode, I suppose.
I mean, yeah.
Hands up. I think there's a few people in the audience relate with that one.
I'm certain. Dungeon mode.
Dungeon mode. What was it? What's it called now on the internet? Orc mode or goblin mode?
Oh, yeah, going goblin mode.
Yeah.
Going goblin mode. Going goblin mode on handstands. It's definitely a... Yeah.
Stop everything else.
Yeah. It is that kind of like, it's a taster of almost what like circus school is like.
Yeah.
In some ways.
That is true. Yeah, but circus school also does have that element. Everyone comes in, everyone's mega excited. Ooh, 3 years of this. And you just go ham at it. And of course, everything is then like lined up for that to work for you. But like we've talked about before, that like a lot of people in circus school survive despite of the training methodology rather than because of it. And they get good because of a lot of other factors as well. But it definitely has that kind of like blast feeling to it,
yeah.
Which I think it's super important to have to some degree, because I think that is a thing that I've fascinated me with, like the handstand kind of growth of community online,
yeah.
And so on, that like it's, and the enthusiastic like a lot of people entering into that doesn't want to be performers and so on, where you don't have this kind of like where is the payoff thing,
yeah.
where you do in competition, you did your big lift, or you like you competed, or like as a performer you have that because there is like a kind of a ritual that's,
yeah.
Attached to it somewhere that like makes things being done different. And I think like social events like this can definitely have that effect, since,
yeah.
You come in for there's a specific reason you come, and you go together with a bunch of other people that you share this common interest with, and you just smash it for a period of time, and then there's like a lot you get out of it, but also friendships and like having a really good time and all of that, which like, yeah, I think is an important part of this kind of internet driven handstand community. And like whether or not it's like a specific event like this one or just a bunch of people deciding to like fuck off to an island to handstand together, I mean, like,
yeah.
It doesn't kind of matter.
We're gonna have handstands the beach.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm gonna set up a handstand cult on a beach somewhere and fish for food, and it's definitely not gonna go downhill.
Just create like an degenerate, what's it called, Lord of the Flies of handstands.
Lord of the Blocks. Yeah, I think it's kind of interesting, these events, because they give us an artificial sense of our peak capacity. Because it was like we're overclocking the system. I remember I was reading, was it Louis Simmons? I think it was Louis Simmons from Westside, and they're talking about using percentage-based training. And they weren't, when someone set a new max in a competition, they knocked 15 or 20% off that max to calculate their percentages in their new training cycle, because they knew the adrenaline, the focus, everything on that event, everything that led to. So they had like basically two max. You have your gym max and you have your competition max. So it's like, oh, I've overclocked the system, but now when I go back to reality I have to like have a slight lower expectation of what comes from these kind of focuses.
Mm.
I definitely know that, like, from, I don't know, every kind of social event focus around circus, like juggling conventions, you got a juggling convention, like, oh shit, I was doing 100 catches of 7 balls, go out the next week, it's like I can't even hold them. What's going on?
Yeah.
And it is that kind of thing when you're in this, you know, speaking to the audience here, but speaking to other people and go to other people's events as well, it's not just ours. There is like that thing of like, oh, I've broken through a new barrier. There's a difference between, I always think of this thing of like doorways and thresholds. It's like sometimes you knock on the door and you get to peek through, but you still have to like grind your way through the threshold before it's your new level.
Mm.
And it is kind of, it can be the post event, you know, this could be a weekend seminar, could be anything, crash where like you get hit with the blunt force of reality, you're like, oh, that was it, this is me now. And it's like, oh no, it's not, it was a taste of what you could be. But then it still has to, the system, you know, what is that thing, regression to the mean,
yeah,
so it regresses to the mean afterwards.
But, yeah. But it's also super important to have have that experience, because like no matter how motivated you are with anything, I mean, you need some degree of success. You need to experience success at some level or other, or else you're going to lose interest. Like there needs to be a burst of something sometimes, because only discipline will carry you a very long way, but it won't, like, it will eventually dwindle unless there's something like that's exciting about it. And it reminds me, like you said, with this like competition, Max. I don't know why, but I came over. I was watching like, I never watched like Olympic lifting, but yeah. I was watching some like from 2019 from like this one Chinese
How
lifter.
How deep on an internet loop were you?
I don't remember. It's just probably some like YouTube recommendations, YouTube and then like, oh hey, some Chinese. Yeah, wait, no, I came across this. Maybe his name is Liu Xiaoshun. I'm not sure.
Yeah,
I'm probably butchering the name. But he was at least some Olympic lifter that had been like superhero and like world record some years ago.
Yeah.
And then he's like now going to make a comeback in like next Olympics or something. Yeah. And I just looked at his the last competition where he like world record superhero monstrous stuff. And he kind of hurt himself on like lift number 2 or something.
Yeah.
And he just comes like he lies, just lies down. Like you see the coaches like put some ice on his back or whatever. He comes out there for like the next lift. I don't remember if he failed it, but at least like he did it in the end, and he just like smashed a world record, and you just see him just gets it up, and you see he's in pain, but like he just smashes through it, and that power of that like extra level that your body kind of has. Of course, it can be reached in a lot of different ways, and I don't think a retreat like this, for example, or an intensive period of practice is the same as going to the absolute top levels of Olympic, being the best in the world.
What are you talking about? We have Olympians here.
But there's definitely something to it. And I think the ritualization of making certain contexts special is important for both the gains, but also like the enjoyment of it, so it doesn't always just become this thing of like, hey, I go to the same place, I do the same things, and that's it, and I should be somehow just happy about that. There needs to be more to it, and I think social aspect is also huge. It's just doing it together with others. You observe others, you see like how different people approach it, you see someone getting something and it gets you stoked, and then you want to try, and like you of course leave from there also with like a big rush. So there's a lot that goes into just like making sure that you're like sharing the activity with others, like in sort of a special context sometimes.
Yeah, I think that kind of context is nice because like everyone who's probably listening, if they're training in a normal training space or people who don't understand it, you have your muggle friends, you're like, I got my press today or I got a new PR. And they're like, what's that? You're like, oh, I didn't get it. And it's just like, there's no one to share the motivation. Whereas like you have this kind of people who like understand the difficulty curve and what you're trying to do. And then when you get it, or they're motivating for you to get it, it's just nice. It's like this weird in-between space between real life. It's like a liminal space.
Yeah. It's creating that sort of like bubble where like, okay, this really, like it really matters to handstand right now. But it's really awesome. I think that's great. And it's really like, I find that a lot of fun too and very motivating because like, I remember when I started all this bullshit and there was literally no one. Like, there wasn't anyone that was doing it. I was scouring YouTube and I found one training video, I remember, by Yuval Ayalon. Because he had like started hand balancing maybe like a year before me. This was 2008. So I found one training video and the rest was like a few Cirque du Soleil performances, but not a whole lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And I found one video of like some sport acro dude training, like world champion sport acro. And I was like, whoa, okay. This is what's actually possible to do. I was like completely blown away by it. But there was just nothing. There was like a complete void, and you knew there existed like this elusive thing of circus school, but like where and what and how. There was no information. There was nothing. So that like I was sort of an enthusiast who wanted to enter into all of that, but like there was no channels. Now there's a shit ton of channels. And I think that's like super, super awesome also to see here when I kind of remember back to the first time I was like mega stoked in front of the fireplace at my mom's place, having the flu and trying to do like a one arm on my left arm, getting like fucking inflammation in the hand, and like still having the flu, and like only place in the house it was warm enough to handstand. I was in front of the fireplace, feeling bad and back pain due to flu, but I couldn't stop because I just had a handstand class, and I was like mega stoked. So like, it's fun to see like the kind of that enthusiasm when you've kind of like yourself been grinded down to the bone, and you're just basically this old skeleton that is still trying to stand up. No, I'm kidding, but yeah,
it's a young skeleton. It's flesh on it.
Yes, I'm what was it when I was in Australia? I was in Bali, but with a bunch of Australians, they used to call me the skull with skin. it's just cool to see the enthusiasm of people that are like still like quite new to it in many ways. It's because it's like among a lot of people that have done it for a long time, they're so far into the game already that, like, yeah, you know what, like, you kind of share very much the same type of experience of time and so on. While for people that are new to it, it's interesting and exciting to work with.
It's also just, it's that kind of thing, like, just thinking about the circus school when it was, like, even when you're training whatever discipline in a circus school, there's only a limited amount of people at one time doing it. Mm. So it can be even then when you're, like, you're in the optimized environment for learning this, you're still on your own.
Yeah, it's you and another hand balancer.
And then you're like, I trained this, I trained that. Like, even in, like, the more popular disciplines, like aerial, you might have one person doing coordinates in a school.
Mm. Yeah.
And then it's like, you hear rumors of, like, this school has other people, but you never meet them.
Yeah.
So it is weird to, like, come from the pre-YouTube environment of circus, where, like, none of this was a community or shared or anything, to now it's like, oh, it's a thing.
Mm.
It's always just, like, interesting to look back at us, like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's like there's a completely weird, different, like, I mean, the entire, like, community aspect. And, like, I talked with a couple of people here before as well, just about, like, the fact that, like, platforms such as, I guess it's, are you live on the Instagram thing? Yeah, I get it, right.
There's, like, even people watching on Instagram now.
So just the fact that, like, you have a platform like that where you just watch other people stare at the floor and you're like, oh yeah, like, that person twisted their legs there, that's pretty cool, I want to do that one day. And then, like, you get in touch with people, and due to getting in touch with people, like, you suddenly you're going somewhere and you know someone who's doing the same shit, and, like, you suddenly have something to bond over. And speaking of that, I'm going to go to an origami convention in Prague in a couple of weeks. I'm mega stoked. And, like, a couple of dudes from Berlin and stuff, they're like, the same shit there. It's just like, you want to join the WhatsApp group, like, you can come to Berlin. I'm like, whoa, cool, yes,
who are you?
Well, that's probably really awesome. So it's the same kind of thing, and I think it's really, really good for, like, for all the bashing that social media gets and deserves. I think there's, like, some parts of that, like, can actually bind together people that are, like, huge distances and, like, very niche hobbies and very niche kind of things they like to do. But then you find someone on the other side of the planet who's equally interested as you in this shit. And then you just, like, have someone from, like, fucking Laos. It's like, if you ever want to come over, like, you're welcome. You're like, oh, shit, it actually has, like, a really nice effect to it.
Yeah. That's the kind of thing. If we could get Mark Zuckerberg out of social media, but keep the social media. It's like, how can we do that?
Yeah. No, it's not even hard, because now they're going to make, like, the metaverse thing, and it seems to fail really badly. So just hope that keeps
going. We say that now, but we're going to be coaching retreats in the metaverse soon.
Oh, by the way, I've tried to do handstands with VR goggles once, where, like, I could see the floor, but I couldn't see my hands. It was really fucked up. Like, the floor, of course, which was a virtual floor, about the same distance from the ground as my head was, but, like, I didn't have hands. It's like I'm staring at the ground, and, like, okay, I tried to focus my eyes as I normally do, but there's no hand on the ground. It's really weird. It was with Ross and Adam, I think.
Yeah,
it was. Hi, Ross and Adam. When we were, I remember I was there with, it was some Ardor thing.
Yeah.
With Hannah Krimble, the gymnast girl as well. She was there. Anyway, tangent, like normal.
Yeah. Taking handstands to strange new environments.
Yeah. So now it's going to be virtual handstands. And then, like, robots beating us at that too. Although, I mean, robots have beaten us for that for a long time. They just, like, lock the position and they stay there for 80 years while we have to suffer with, like, our flimsy, squishy bodies and muscles and shit.
Your flimsy meat sack slowly starts to fail.
Yep. No, but it's been really cool here so far. And I mean, I always encourage people to go to, like, events such as this, because there's, like, always a lot to learn, and, like,
come to our event, go to someone else's event.
Yeah.
There's a lot of competent teachers out there doing ones, and it's always that idea of learn off a lot of people.
Yeah.
It's always pretty good.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to get out of that, and, like, because, again, one person is one person. There's a lot of different approaches, a lot of different ways of thinking, a lot of different things that, like, just might hit you the right way at the right time. So it's, and more importantly than that, that, like, the connections that people that meet make with each other is, like, actually as important or more, maybe, because you're creating, like, actual social bonds that will matter over time. And you get to learn a lot of things together, and it's just,
I'm still, like, waiting for our first marriage to come from one of these retreats.
Ah.
So, I don't know if you people hooked up and these things. What's that?
You guys were already married.
No, we're just like having a bromance.
Yeah, just proper bromance. Mm. Yeah, unfortunately, like that. He just got a kid, you know. It's like
we're not married though, so you know. Huh? Yeah. You can if you propose.
Yeah, but aren't you guys engaged?
We're engaged. We've been engaged for a long time. I had to get married a long time ago, and then Corona kicked in.
Yeah. Roughness. Yeah. Maybe like marriage in handstand. Oh God. Oh please, no.
Oh God, that'd be amazing. As they exchange rings, well.
Yeah. Both have to do one arm. So yeah. It's just like, not. This is not gonna work out. Okay. Like, you're still on fingertips. Like you've been that for a year. Like we need to get married soon. Tax reasons. I want to see that discussion in like someone's living room, like actually seriously, like you need to move on from here now.
Then you think you have it, you're like, I'm ready, and then you realize you can't do a handstand in your wedding suit because you can't get your shoulder overhead. And
yeah, that's going to be like a huge, huge issue. Like, needs like fix the gowns, like the wedding dress, it sits right, goes down.
Then you get stage fright because the crowd is watching. You can't actually do your one arm.
Yeah, then you have to perform, right? And say, you fall over. You have to go back up on the canes. That's going to be awesome. With the entire like music playing, you know, everything. It's just a total nightmare. Yep. I want to see that. someone watching, go do that, please, right now.
It's probably been done.
Yeah, I mean, has it? Wedding act?
And also circus performer friends, they like set up a tightrope and done their vows and swapping on that.
Oh, that's cute.
But, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure some bullshit, like no, some circus stuff has happened with it for sure. I mean, like circus people are too nerdy to not do it.
So yeah.
Somewhere or other it would have.
Or would they?
Or
would they?
Do you remember Ireland and marrying in the Renegade?
Like, to be two of your friends. Oh, yeah, I married two of my friends at a Renegade.
Who did?
Thanks for Till, our host, just reminding that.
Oh, sick.
So I married, like, one of my secret things is I'm actually a minister. Mm-hmm. I can marry people. If anyone wants to get married right now, I can make it legal.
Really? Can you? Like, who are you? Where's Emmett? What did you do to him?
Yeah, so at a Renegade show at a juggling convention, which is an open mic, basically, for juggling that happens after midnight and it's a bit debaucherous, they got married, and that one went fucking... The guy, Paul, who got married was... let's just put it, he's a big dude. He's like, used to be an acrobat, he's a big dude now. He's about 130, 140 kilos, pure sex machine. He got absolutely fucking... hammered at his own wedding. Like him and his bride, they actually got hammered as well, but they couldn't get back from the stage to their tent, which was less than 200 meters, so they broke into like a shed that was on the camping site and slept in the camping site, slept in the shed
on their wedding night. And that sounds like a fucking renegade to me. Jesus.
Yeah, it's a good renegade act. So yeah, if anyone can top that,
yeah, I'd like to see that.
Yeah,
but yeah, what's it called? Tangents. That's what we do, and then this podcast kind of goes around the tangents. I usually say, but yeah, pretty cool, cool place we're at in Turkey. Nova Sol is the name of the place, and it's up in this like huge hillside, kind of mountainous, the entire region, gorgeous view. And yesterday we went for like a hike down the mountain and took a boat and dropped all my things in the water. And
I think that story needs a bit more explaining.
Yeah, okay, well, how should I explain this? So the boat situation wasn't exactly like
wasn't like a dock that you get onto a boat.
Yeah, there was no parking spot for the boat. Boat comes in, there's a fucking ladder on it. You have to wade out in the water and get on the boat. And like close to shore, there's just like pretty large, very round and slippery rocks under the water surface. And then one of the participants...
who remain nameless.
Yeah, who may remain nameless, had shoes on and pants, and I had just been in the water. I had like basically pants also, but they were pulled up at least. So I was like, okay, fuck it, jump on my back and I'll kind of carry you to the ladder. And I start walking out there, Like, and I'm kind of like wading in water, and like I step on a rock that moves, and then like some waves come, and I'm like, I'm fighting all I can to not fall backwards because I can just drop her from my back and into the water. She was fully dressed. So I just spent like all my power just, like, keeping like myself upright. I kind of wade forwards, and I finally get her to the boat, and I just grab the ladder because I couldn't like help her actually up into the boat. So I grabbed the ladder and just leaned forward, and she kind of grabbed the ladder and just like kind of like pulled and dragged herself onto the ladder and got into the boat, and her like her shoes got wet and everything, so like it didn't really help at all. And then like someone else picked up my backpack with shoes inside and shit, and it wasn't properly closed, and then my phone fell in the water with the shoes and everything. Phone survived and shoes survived. It was all good. It was a complete nightmare. And like my backpack was really wet, and I was like, holy shit, I have my Nintendo Switch in the backpack. It's turned on. Fuck. But it went fine with that one too. So yeah, it was a bit of an adventure.
Does that count as a spill?
Yes. Let's say that counts like a serious spill.
Not this very, we have a little pot going between the other people here.
Do you actually?
Yeah, we have a pot going fiver in of like closest without going over. How much Mikael spills coffee under the stuff?
I did spill like a significant amount when I walked down the stairs here the other day. Like
four.
The kind of like you start spilling, and you're like, okay, I stop caring. So you're just like on the way down. It's like, if okay, I've already spilled, so like I've already burnt my finger, so just fuck them. I need to get to the house. so I don't know if that counts as one or like seven. Let's compromise. Let's say it's cost.
Okay, we're
two.
Up to four.
No, fuck off.
I'm winning that money.
Yeah, well, it wasn't that bad at that explosion I had at home, though, with a fucking new coffee press. It was like press, and like my entire kitchen was just full of coffee everywhere. Fucking miserable. Completely new coffee press too. Never had this issue before. Any coffee press ever. You put in the water, put in the coffee, you wait a bit, take the thing, you push it down, done. But this one, like, it was so goddamn tight between the glass.
You've
and
literally
like, the
exploded
thing.
Coffee presses in my house.
Oh, fuck off.
It's never happened before. I can think of two or three incidences.
Oh, fuck off. I think, though, the best one I've ever seen, I came into the room of a friend's place once where there was like a mocha brewer that had literally exploded because it was broken, so like when it boiled, like the pressure actually just like made the thing unscrew, and just the entire room was just like covered in coffee from like ceiling to floor. That was quite beautiful.
Yeah, one of my housemates done that in circus school. She just like left coffee on the stove and then went to school.
Oh shit.
Came back and like the stove was still on. The whole kitchen was painted with coffee.
Oh lord.
Then I kind of pointed out, like, we're gonna need to repaint that. Mm-hmm. And then she was like, no, I'm just moving out.
Peace out. Almost lit the entire complex on fire and just fucks off. Great. Even I haven't done that
yet.
Yeah, but leaving the thing on, that's something I'm too paranoid to do.
Yeah,
never done that. Once I went on a train, actually, when I was on the way to Norway, I was like, fucking shit, did I leave the stove on? Jesus Christ. I didn't, but I had like a friend come over and just like look in the window to just check if it was on. Anyway,
what was he going to do if he couldn't get the door open? Just
He knew the neighbors, and I was living downstairs, and they could have technically just gone into the basement and like gotten through to through there because the door there was open. But yeah, just fear that got into my head. It's very rare I get that fear, but that was like a serious one sitting on the train. It's like, oh my fuck, what if? And then like it wouldn't leave. But yeah, coffee things. I haven't had too many disasters other than that here, have you?
Are you feeling okay?
Yeah, feeling fine. Feeling I did my deed. I mean, I think the boat incident like kind of filled the quota for at least a week.
It's just like one day's incident.
Yeah, but it was a significant one. I mean, I tried. I'm sorry. I could have tried better, but rock was slippery in that face. Yeah. I mean, other than that, it's been pretty good. Can't complain. So
have we got anything else, or should we wrap it up?
I think it's pretty much time to wrap it up, like normal. Yeah. Like as soon as we're done, we're usually done, aren't we?
Yeah.
Like live on internet. Like, I wonder how many people are watching still. Like,
how many people are watching?
13 people. we lost a significant amount.
That's more than we normally have on the cast.
Yeah.
We're only doing this for cast for like the five people who listen, because everyone else is here.
Yeah, true. Yeah, but I guess like that's a good
the awkward laugh from the audience, like, we don't listen.
Listen to one half episode once and keep talking about PyCanstan. Yeah, but I guess
we haven't done PyCanstan this retreat. We're gonna have to do that tomorrow.
Yeah, it's kind of I think half pike tomorrow, or the half past six, as I've started to call it with my massive space brain. instead of the seven. Taking you to the next level here. You know, like 7:30, 6:30, you know?
Yeah.
Makes full sense. I think that's a good way to end it.
Yeah. There, we will catch you next week for another HansaCast Live. Hello, and welcome back to the Handstand Cast with me, Emmett Lewis, and my origami-abusing co-host, Mikael Christiansen.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
We are having, once again, another amazing cast here. Best cast in the world, I might say. That we have a live audience. Mm-hmm. So please make some noise and prove that we're not just pretending.
That soundbox of you really improved, didn't it?
That's good, isn't it?
Good that you have these added sounds so we can keep defrauding our audience. Sick.
Defrauding. Yeah, I always kind of look at these podcasts when they're like, oh, we're having live show, and they fill out like a 2,000 person thing to watch people do a podcast, and you go to them, it's just like, it's probably better to listen to it in the car. But anyway, you guys are here, you're stuck, you can't move around, you can't do any of your dishes, you can't any of the other things you do while podcasting. We're live on Instagram.
Are we?
Yay! Yeah. Oh,
hi.
Yeah, who's there? Is it? Yeah.
It's like probably like three or four people like last week.
My mother was watching last week, and that was kind of awkward. My mother.
What's your mother? Yeah, your mother had like written the messages, hadn't she? That's great.
It's
a mompliment, as it's called.
Where's your mother? Does she have Instagram?
Mom, yes, she does have Instagram. I should have told her that we're going live. Again, I forgot. I should, things.
Quick.
Whoops.
Share your mother's Mom, DM hi. Location.
Yeah. Yeah, so we're again here in Turkey. Second day or second week of the retreat.
Yeah.
Which, day four. So we're heading towards the end.
Yeah. One more final day of destruction tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Where we unleash the greatest secrets of handstands.
Yes.
To ever be found out.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Finally shall be revealed the secrets from the crypt.
Yeah. So our topic this evening, do we have a topic? We have a topic, as kind always. Of. Our topic is kind of, because there's an interesting contrast. Last week we had a kind of beginning to touch on intermediate group, and this group is quite strong. We have a kind of finished intermediate into advanced training practice group. So it's kind of quite a strong juxtaposition, actually, for me, between last week's group and this week's group.
Definitely.
Where it's, last week was, everyone was great, but there was, as you kind of pointed out, it took a while for people to be convinced about what we were saying to them. Whereas this week's group was just kind of like,
we can sell them snake oil.
You can basically sell them snake oil. We've been doing that all week. What's that muscle rub you had?
Yeah. Huh? Oh, yeah, that one. Yeah, Linux, it's called. Snake buy oil. It. You can buy it on linux.se or .s or .no.
Linux.
Yeah.
It programs your computer faster. It runs Emacs.
Yeah, but like you said, I mean, it's pretty interesting with the kind of the difference between teaching people who are like already experienced with how much bullshit the practice is compared to someone who's just kind of just entered into it and perhaps hasn't been either jaded or kind of got their soul crushed yet on how long it can, or like how long things can take. Really know how, they don't know if they're invested yet in one sense. And that doesn't mean that like the group that wasn't here wasn't invested. It's not what I'm saying.
They're invested but enough to come to a retreat.
Exactly,
so.
Which is
a pretty big investment.
Yeah, which is pretty much more than most would have, but it's just like it's pretty different in the way of thinking in that sense that like, okay, you're entering into something new that you don't know really how you will respond to in terms of like long term versus like short term and so on. So there's like definitely a lot of interesting things in relation to how it's being explained. And like one thing with a group like such as this one, you don't need to motivate anyone. You don't need to go come with motivating words and says like, yeah, so like keep practicing for a bit longer. Everyone knows that, okay, yeah, they're here because they want to practice a bit longer.
Yeah.
They're not here to like, okay, I got the gains out of the retreat. It's more practice methodologies and ways of thinking and so on that will lead towards future results rather than just like, how do I do the thing? Well, they already know how to do the thing. They just want the details on how that can be done better or more efficiently.
Yeah, yeah, it's definitely gonna. I think you pointed out, like, it's kind of like when you say something to this group, people pick it up very quickly, or if they don't pick it up, they can understand why they're not doing it. And that's kind of one of the more interesting things with the group last week when you say, no, do it differently. A lot of times they haven't got like the level of contrast in their body where they can go, they can't tell the difference between the right thing and the wrong thing, or they can't tell what they've done.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, you know, it's a different challenge as a teacher of like, how can I either explain something that someone understands it? How can I make a constraint that they can just only do one thing and only do what I want? Or how can I give them a sensation or something to lock onto in the body where they can go, oh, this is what he wants, this is not what he wants, and I can tell the difference apart. I can't do it, but I know if it happens kind of randomly. It's like what I was saying to a lot of people last week is like, I don't describe and cue you and expect you to be able to replicate the cue, but I describe and cue you so that when the thing happens randomly, you're actually able to name it and label it.
Yeah.
And that you go like, oh, that's what he meant by stacking shoulders. That's what he meant by verticality. That's what he meant by like this, when I pike hips, this will happen. Whereas with the more advanced group, it's like people have a bit more body sensory lexicon to project what things could feel like. So you go, okay, you're doing this, but I want you to do that. And you kind of see they immediately go blank eye and go, oh yeah, I can picture what that would feel like in my body. And then go up and try it. And then maybe it's like, okay, I didn't get it right, but I knew what I'd done wrong. Whereas in the other group, it's like, I went up, I'd done it right. And it's like, no, maybe not. Maybe it's still random. So that's always quite interesting. It's like, how do you transmit information at a different level to work at the, like, who's in front of you rather than just going like...
I think there's also one thing, I mean, like, again, it's not saying anything bad about anyone that like, are new to it, but like, I feel when I'm working with people that are newer to the practice, it's also kind of like a, because you want people to find it interesting, and hence it's a little bit of a thing of, how to say, motivate people or make people understand that, okay, well, this is a long-term practice that's going to take a lot of time, but like, how can it still seem appealing instead of saying like, well, yeah, like, give it 3 years. That's not very... not very, very motivating for someone who's new, but someone who's like pretty advanced or like, okay, yeah, they've already did for 4 years. It's like, okay,
yeah,
they're already invested. Like, they probably know that they're going to be training handstands in 3 years' time.
Yeah.
Maybe more, maybe less. That's kind of irrelevant, but at least they know that like the level of commitment is there. And I think, of course, that's like some beginners do too. But I do think that like it feels often to me as if like, I want to ensure that I can have an encouraging sort of atmosphere to it, so that it doesn't feel like, okay, because that is also one thing we've talked about, that both in the cast and together before, that like there is this, the culture of hand balancing being kind of like not elitist, but it's like, ooh, we are hardcore, we train many hours, and because we train many hours, we know it's gonna take a lot of time, and it's never good enough, and it's never perfect, and it's but like that's not always what we need to look for either. Like, there are different nuances to it that like makes it actually like have longevity in a way.
Yeah, I think it's that kind of thing of like, how do you transmit your enthusiasm for a practice? Because like there's that thing of like, someone start, when you start any practice and you're completely new to it, it is just like, it's a fantasy projection of how this practice would be go. You're just like, oh, I'm really going to be into this. I bought all the gear. And like, well, have you actually tried it for 6 months? No. I had to get the gear first. And then it's like, oh, 3 months later, it's collecting dust in the closet. We've all probably been there a bit with things. We're like, oh, I thought I'd really like it, but no, I didn't like it.
Yeah, Warhammer. Never played the fucking game. Had loads of
models. Has anyone ever actually played a game of Warhammer? I thought people just painted the models.
Yeah,
and
that's
the lore.
What I did too. That's what I'm doing right now. I can't play a game with it.
Origami hammer.
Mm-hmm.
We could sell paper and make a fortune.
Or hammer.
Or hammer. Where was I? Yeah, so then you had this projection of like, oh, this is what it was going to be like. But then you do the practice long enough, and then you're like, oh, it's for me, but I'm not certain about it. And it's like, well, I've been doing this a long time. Mick has been doing this a long time. The people in this retreat have been doing it a long time. It's like they have a certain level of enthusiasm that doesn't need to be questioned. It's just like, it's just what I do. And it's not like, you know.
It's more like you need to curb it for people.
Yeah.
Like this is a gap. Because I mean, yeah. I know how it is to do a hell way too much.
It's definitely that. But then with the beginner kind of level, it's like, how do you get someone to go, okay, I bought in and I'm enthusiastic, but the excitement at the start has faded. And then it's like, well, this is going to take a long time. And that reality sets in. And it's like, how do you get them keep going if they want to? When the reality of like, oh, it doesn't just come easy. It's not just a 3-month process. It's not just like 28 days to your handstand, ultimate life and new apartment. And that's kind of the interesting thing. I was like, it's where, you know, the cutoff for a lot of things happens, I think, not just handstands,
yeah, but yeah,
it's like
sure.
You get past that 3 to 6 month stage and then you're like, oh, is it for me? I've been doing it a year, you know. And that's the other thing as well, is like with this group, a lot of people, handstands is their kind of main thing.
Yep.
Or handstand, very close adjacent stuff is. Whereas the other group or the more beginner people as well, they do other things as well. So it's like handstand for them is adjacent to another practice. And that's always kind of like, this is an interesting one because I think it's a great compliment to a lot of training. But then it's like, oh, you know, pole dance and aerial is my passion. It's my real passion. But I just want to get better at handstands and just do them a bit on the side. And then it's like, well, obviously you're not going to be enthusiastic as someone who's chasing, like, you know, one arm and like performing on that and like all the advanced stuff. So then it's like, ooh, how do you keep interested? Maybe that's the secret, do something else.
Yeah. I think it's also like some of the things that we've been doing, both this and previous week, with like adding in things that like, that's like we talked about a lot, like adding in things that aren't of the standardized vocabulary of just this, because I mean, the fun thing with hand balancing, it doesn't really even exist a standardized vocabulary, yet we act as if there does.
Yeah.
Like there might be one in sport acro, like certain positions and things give you lots of points and certain others do not. But like within circus, there doesn't exist and shouldn't, in my opinion, exist such distinctions. But yet we practice as if they are there, and then like we just get stuck in those, and that's been like my both artistic and technical, critique of hand balancing for a very long time. That like the practice itself imposes this style of training where we go through our main vocabulary for so much time that like the cool things I'd like to try that, we forget about them. So I have to do my straddle and I need to do my straight and I need to do my press. And then like 2.5 hours have passed and you're tired. And I do that a lot too. There's like several combinations. I'm like, oh, shit, this is sick. I want to practice it. And then it just dwindles because I had to practice all of the other crap that like it's just in my routine in a sense. And I think like being able, particularly when working like closely with groups for like extended like periods like we do here, that like to be able to offer other things, and like that's to take examples in this group, we were working with stuff such as Air Baby from Breaking, which is a very like, it's a related balance to certain families of one arms, but it's not the same, but it does add kind of a different dimension. It adds something you can work on this at the same time as other handstands, since it like uses different dynamics and so on. And I think like allowing oneself to be like more creative than that, and like I think with events such as what we do here, like we have the ability to offer stuff from other dimensions other than only like, okay, we're going to be straighter and straighter incrementally until we are the straightest and then the end.
You're going to turn into such a straight line that eventually you just disappear into the void.
We need to get Helgi back on a podcast just to explain
we actually have Dr. Helgi in the audience.
Dr. Helgi is in the audience. And he explained black holes yesterday, and it was pretty awesome.
Hairy black holes. Yeah, this is when we teach you. I think the latest thing we're talking about, we have to get Helgi on the podcast, is that, did you know that your handstand can be aligned by the gravitational waves? This is the thing. We've calculated it. We've done a bit of calculations, and we know how hard it will make, or easier it will make your handstand. And also that if the sun and the moon, this is mind-blowing to me, mind-blowing stuff, we're actually going to launch a whole new program based on this, that if the sun and the moon have an eclipse, the gravitational force, you do a handstand at the equator, the gravitational force will pull your handstand straighter and make it easier. So if you're looking for a speed boost, there's that. But no, this is where it gets even better. So we have all our constellations where we have our star signs from astrology. Now, the different star signs have a different number of stars in them. So if you have 15 stars in Libra and 17 stars in Capricorn or whatever, and you do it while there's an eclipse in Libra versus Capricorn on the equator, you're also a Pisces, you have to be a Pisces for this to work, then your handstand will be even straighter. So we're going to be launching like Rate My Handstand via astrology.
Yes.
And how to align your handstand with your stars.
We should do that, like, you know, like back in the 90s when you had these call-in services a lot, where like you could call in and get like an horoscope or some shit. We should do that with handstands. Bet we'd get like a lot of troll calls.
Well, probably get a lot of people being serious.
Yeah, that's the worst part.
Yeah,
like that guy I found on in the New York like Subway magazine. He was called Mr. Cunty, and he would just fix everything for you. He was some sort of spiritual guru, yeah. And he just called Mr. Cunty, and like he literally like it was just anything from like relationship advice to just financial shit. He just sort shit out with magic, and it's like it was Cunty with K, but otherwise written like these were word. So that was glorious.
So that's why we can say it out loud. Thank you, Mr. Cunty.
Yeah. Yeah, shoutouts, mad shoutouts.
Oh shit, speaking of mad shit going on, look at the moon behind everyone. So we can see the moon is just riding, it's just turned blood red. I think I have literally angered the star gods.
Yes. Like, oh fuck off with your bullshit.
Shit.
Now to cue the meteor rain, essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, it's been really, really inspiring. I mean, it's the same we talked about last week. It's really, really inspiring to see both beginners, like people... like starting out with a lot of kind of that like drive and energy and like the enthusiasm of someone who's new in a practice. I think that should never be underestimated, because it's very powerful and really, yeah. I mean, it's your driving force. I remember when I fucking started, yeah, both hand balancing and breaking and other things, you just like, shit, this
is awesome.
This is super awesome. And I think that should never be allowed to be curbed by like, oh yeah, this is going to take so long and you should like do do. Like, use that drive, and like it's a fucking catapult force, which is awesome. But also seeing like groups like this where it's like, hey, okay, these people have actually invested like several years into this, and like they're returning people that you've seen like train for years, and that you know that like they're like, yeah, well they're equally dedicated now as then, and equally dedicated as someone who's just like full on with it. And I think that part is like, that makes me really happy to be able to kind of like share like, yeah, knowledge and all of that, but like just sharing like the interest for the field itself, I think is just like a very rewarding thing, and something I'm sure that a lot of people that go to events such as this like actually, or that must be like a kind of a significant part of going to such events, because you do get that kind of affirmation, you do get that kind of group feeling, and a sensation of literal community, which is awesome. And that doesn't need to happen at kind of like an event such as this. That can happen in a park, that can happen wherever, but I do think it's really cool. I mean, for people at any level to kind of just share the same stuff, but it doesn't matter if it's like mega advanced or if it's just like, well, okay, I just want to be able to get on my fucking hands, can you help me? Sure, let's go.
Bye. Yeah, I think one of the things that's coming out of this one, more so than the last retreat, was because everyone is kind of, I don't want to say narrowly focused, but a bit more clustered in the skill tree, that a lot more sort of random things to try. Someone tries something, and then someone else goes, hey, maybe I could do that, but has never tried it before, and it's probably not even something we'd suggest to do. And then they go, and then they try it, and they get close or not. It's like, today was like front split get-ups. Like, it wasn't on the menu, but someone tried it, and then someone else was like, oh, I have to give that a go. And a few people were giving a go at various levels.
Mm. Or so like the bridge pulls.
Yeah, the bridge pulls to handstand. Yeah, it's just that kind of, particularly when people are clustered, like, this is the kind of thing, when people have a lot of things to draw on and everyone has kind of picked their own kind of things to play with, then you come in this and it's like, oh, I can do this. And you're like, well, actually, I can do that. Whereas when you're starting out on stuff, you have a kind of, you don't have as broad a base to the pyramid.
Mm.
So that's kind of, you know, this is kind of maybe one of the selling points of spending more time getting better at the thing, because you get more toys to play with.
Mm.
But at the start, it can seem a bit like, that's what I was thinking, like the skill tree for handstands is a bit like a diamond in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
It's like starts off very narrow at the bottom, then it broadens out,
mm.
and then it kind of narrows again at the top.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, like, I think there is certainly a thing there, which I think is also both very important for the practice and for general things, which is, like, there are these, we talked about that before, that yeah. there are these, like, kind of these kind of thresholds where you suddenly a bunch of new things are, like, yeah. available to you. And that's, like, for example, what I see in a group like this, where, like, a lot of people either are, like, they can sort of do a one arm on a good try, or some even can do, a pretty consistent one arm, or it's, like, close enough, meaning close yeah. in, like, 3-6 months, etc. But, like, it's not, it's kind of on the radar. And I usually, like, note that to be a time where, like, okay, there's a, like, you need to stick with it for a while, but you have this kind of impending explosion of things yeah. that are, like, suddenly available to you. Not perfectly, but you can try this, you can try that, and hey, oh, that was possible, yeah. that was possible, even though it's, like, definitely not perfect. Yeah. And I think it's a super inspiring zone to enter into, and I really remember that myself when, kind of, like, after my first months, and, like, of course, my breaking knowledge just
yeah.
having helped me out so much, and just, like, oh, I can try this, I can try that. And, like, none of it was clean or solid, but, like, it was, I could feel that, hey, this is a possibility for my body.
Yeah.
And having that experience is, I think, huge, particularly, like, after you, I think that the one arm is one of those biggest thresholds, because, like, you worked your ass off to get it. And once it's pretty solid, I mean, like, 10, 15 seconds of, like, straddle, boom, you can suddenly start trying just a bunch of things that are,
yeah.
like kind of above your level, but still, like, possible enough.
So yeah, you get,
like,
a feeling for them.
Yeah.
And I think it's just that thing, even with, like, when people, sex and thing with two arms, when people get to that stage when they're just, like, beyond holding their breath on two arms and not falling down.
Yeah.
Once they start being able to breathe, then it's like, oh, actually, I can try a bit of a tuck. I could try a straddle.
Mm.
These kind of things, just the same kind of threshold.
Mm.
So it is just, like, yeah, getting people to the threshold. It's yeah. going to knock on the door and then step through.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, a lot of it is just, like, beating your head against the wall until you actually get through it.
Yeah, and I mean, like, I think that we've talked about that a lot as kind of both on the cast and off, that, like, a lot of the time doing good coaching has to do with, like, yeah, making sure people stay motivated, because, like,
yeah.
only discipline, only death and glory, like, it lasts a while, but it doesn't last forever. And at some point you might need, like, if you're either, like, a bit demotivated or something, you might need, like, a bit of a lift or something that makes you, like, yeah. hey, yeah, this is a bit fun, like, I can try something now. And being able to either offer, like, not necessarily a new exercise, but, like, maybe a new take on certain things that just yeah. gives you, like, a bit of a sensation that this is, like, worthwhile doing, because it's not uncommon for you to get stuck, because that's just, like, something that, like, is bound to happen in any yeah. process, but, like, particularly with this bullshit where, like, sometimes you encounter a problem you don't even know how to solve, and it can be such a thing as, yeah. like, hey, you're just, your fingers is just not strong enough, end of story. But that you can spend, like,
yeah.
like a year or two just, like, not knowing that. So yeah, having, like, the ability to isolate to help people out figure out those things, so that, like, it can ultimately be a rewarding practice, because if it isn't, then, like, well, you are literally wasting your time. And I think that is, like, a yeah, it's interesting and important in all kinds of,
yeah.
of teaching contexts, that you, like, you provide something that, hey, this is actually interesting for, like, by itself to yeah. just do it. And it's interesting for us as coaches to engage with, and this is not, like, it's not just, like, the success stages that are, hey, okay, this is awesome right now because yeah. I'm doing the thing. Well, doing the thing will feel like not doing the thing 6 months later, because then it's become too casual
yeah.
and you're chasing the next dragon in a way.
More dragons.
Yes.
That is, yeah, I think that's a big role of coaching and other stuff, particularly with when we get more advanced people, is, like, finding the nuance and the detail, and making, like, a lot of what you've been doing this week is just, like, making old stuff new
mm.
or making new stuff old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but
the context of that is just, like, oh, well, we have one way of doing something and you can kind of get in that, but actually there's a couple of ways to do something. And, like, yes, we, you know, teach and we have our own way of sort of teaching, explaining things, but then eventually some of the stuff just goes out the water and we're like, okay, well, you've done it so long, but now just do this.
Yeah.
I think all I've been doing this week is shouting knees at people.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You have some laughs in the audience.
A lot of,
for a certain reason.
A lot of I feel scenes. Knees.
Yeah, it's definitely, like, such such it's actually like an interesting concept that like it's not that long since it struck me that hey, like what, like there are a bunch of ways to modify up and down the difficulty of a lot of this stuff to make it not because it's so goddamn necessary to do all of the variations, but they do add variation. They do add like ways to both track progress, but they also add like this nuances to the practice. Okay, I can do the fucking one arm straddle and I struggle with the legs together, but hey, I can make the straddle harder in various ways, and that can add a lot because suddenly you have something that's a bit closer to what your level is in between these stages.
Yeah,
and I mean we talked about that a lot before as well with the fact that it's like we wanted further like several stages between straddle and legs together one arms, for example. Yeah. So like let's see how we can make that a reality. Whereas like the fact that I started thinking about like, okay, so we're doing like handstands without fingers as a extra drill for intermediates. Yeah. But like if you are at an equivalent intermediate level of advanced, i.e. you can do a one arm, but getting further, okay, can we just make the setup slightly harder?
Yeah.
And that like, okay, that adds a hell of a lot over time because you have various variables extra that you can play with and like do several in a row, blah, blah, blah. There's a lot that isn't just do an entirely new thing that can add to what you're already doing in a way.
Yeah, I think also a lot of like playing with these setups and making stuff you can do harder through other ways as well. It's not so much about getting it perfect. It's about just failing at something that's harder.
Mm.
I really think there's a lot of value in that we kind of forget that we like, particularly with two-arm stuff when you're getting more advanced, you don't fail so much anymore. Whereas when you're a beginner, you failed all the fucking time.
Mm.
When you're intermediate, like learning the shapes and the shape transitions, all the stuff, you fell all the time. But when you get to the point where it's like, truck straddle, diamond, moving between, bit of flagging is all easy, you're not falling out so much. And there's a lot of value to that falling and trying to save a lot of stuff. I think that was kind of what a lot of people just in the stuff, particularly what we were doing on day one, was just like, okay, you're on blocks, you got fingers off. So I think you're basically fingers off, chin on chest, tuck was kind of the movement that was explained. But it was like, okay, first, can you take your fingers off? Can you release your grip on the block? Okay, cool. Can you do a tuck handstand, then take the fingers off? Okay, cool. Can you do a tuck handstand, tuck the chin to that, take your fingers off? Cool. Can you do chin on chest, tuck, fingers off? Can you fingers off, tuck, chin on chest?
Yeah.
Can you do it all really fast?
Yeah. Yeah, and suddenly you have a shit ton of stuff.
Yeah, with just those three combinations. I'm sure you could work out a matrices and go like, oh, okay, take the box on them. But it's more just like that rapid introduction of difficult things. For me, watching was like, it was interesting to just see, because people were like advanced, you know, showing their one arms straight away. It's like, okay, I do one, that's cool, but let's just see what happens when we give you something easy, but not.
Mm. Yeah, and it's very useful for like, kind of like, you take all those drills and kind of like, they kind of go into the warm-up bucket and like, you see what's useful and what's not. And like, it's kind of... because like in the end they are not going to change your one arm practice or anything, but like they are ways to again add variation, add ways of practice that isn't just the like same old story of the same old positions that must be entirely mastered, sort of. I think that that's like kind of also when looking back at like old retreats and other kind of the teaching method, how I feel it kind of like evolves over time. I think that a lot of stuff like that kind of like just kind of like slides in there. It's like, hey, yeah, this is actually pretty useful. This is interesting. And to me, which I find fun with teaching, is that like constant like minor evolution and not just be like, okay, I'm just going to churn out like something that I know works and I'll just like stick to that. It needs to be also interesting for like me in relation to how to approach and like what other people find interesting. And you kind of constantly adjusting and seeing just like, okay, what happens if we introduce this? How do people take to it as well? That is like hugely important, of course, because like you can think you're the best teacher in the world and people just do not like it as long as they don't fucking tell you. Like you just need to like also be kind of acutely sensitive to like, okay, what's working over time and what doesn't. And but if you don't allow yourself any sort of kind of experimentation within the teaching format either, it just ends up mega stale. And I think that you kind of losing out on like a lot of knowledge for yourself and potentially like new interesting ways of like approaching.
Yeah, it's that kind of thing. Once you have a base teaching method that you know works. You're like, okay, I can get results with it. But then at the same time, you do have to like slowly slip things in and just see how it goes.
Mm.
Not just throw everything out. Like the biggest risk on anyone, like whenever you're picking a coach, go to their Instagram feed and see if they're changing what they're doing every 6 months. And this goes for health and fitness more so than handstands, I'd say. But they're like, this month I'm teaching Westside. This month I'm a body transformation compound specialist. This month I'm doing this. And if they're just changing like every 6 months, they're like, okay, this person just hasn't spent long enough doing something to say whether it works or not. Whereas once you just kind of see someone's like, okay, I'm teaching CrossFit. And then you see the evolution of how they teach CrossFit over 5 years. And slowly it's tweaking, things are going out. It's still CrossFit, but it's done different. And that's kind of what you want, I suppose. It still gets the results, but there's newness in there.
Yeah, and like just I think also it's a proof that you care, that you're actually interested in what you're doing. Because if you're not, then you're just going to stick to the same old song and just like basically play Wonderwall over and over and over.
Run handstandclass.exe.
Yeah. Instead of just like, hey, but like, there are other songs than Wonderwall, you know.
Come in.
So,
do dish holds.
Yes.
Chest to wall. Okay. Free balance.
Wall
runs. Next class. Let's go. Roll ones. Yep. Wall ones to finish.
Yeah, I wonder like how, like, I mean, for myself too, I wonder like how the kind of our approaches too will change over time, since like they aren't the same as they used to be.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing. I mean, because we're just humans and we're always prone to like making all kinds of like mistakes, but at least like if it happens in the learning process, then like there are things to gain from that.
Yeah, it's that kind of thing. I wonder what's going to come next. Handstands in the metaverse.
Oh God. As I said before, I tried in VR glasses and it was awful. You don't see your hands. So
yeah, but like this is the mistake you're making. You're thinking you actually have to handstand while wearing VR glasses. We're just going to program in the experience and get the inversion table. Sick.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's good. You just like have like a mega giant, like enormous contraption that turns you upside down.
Yeah.
That sounds like really smart.
Pretty good.
Sounds like something that like we should invest in. Like, speaking of, we need to buy that fucking thing for the next. I'm going to find it. It's called, I remember the name. It's called Killinder, and it's garbage, and we need it for the next retreat. Because we're going to take the Omega piss. So now I say it live on the interwebs. We're going to buy a thing, and it's going to be trash. Put everyone in it, and just like make them do the worst shit they've ever done.
Congratulations. You are now trash.
Yeah, so come to our next retreat, because you're gonna do like the worst.
Where's the fucking moon ever gone?
Oh, moon rip. Yeah, moon's over. Like you angered the gods.
I think I did.
It's soon gonna hit.
It's suspiciously dark here.
Yeah, rip, rip, rip.
I'm scared. Okay, with that in mind, I think we'll wrap up there.
Yeah, sounds like a pretty good. Pretty
now
good
that you've committed to the Jankerizer 4000.
Yes.
Yeah. Other than that, we will catch you next week. Or 2 weeks long. Some amount of time. We will catch you later on the Handstand Cast. And thank you to our live studio audience. One more round. I swear there's people here. It's not just 10. I'm going to sample that though and repeat it on the
put it
cast
in every time.
The Handstand Cast is brought to you by Handstand Factory and is produced by Motion Impulse. Thanks for tuning in. You can find a full transcript of each episode, along with the show notes and any relevant references, on handstandfactory.com/podcast. Thanks to Isaac for editing and Jordan for transcriptions. Music by Daniel Horwath. If you want to support the show, you can buy us a coffee on buymeacoffee.com or consider starting one of our Handstand Factory online programs. Links are in the show notes.